The Book Nook on WYSO is presented by the Greene County Public Library, with additional support from Wright Memorial Public Library, Clark County Public Library, Tipp City Public Library, Dayton Metro Library, and Washington Centerville Public Library.
Hello, welcome to the Book Nook on WYSO. I'm Vic McCunis. Got a little frog in my throat today. I've been out playing with the seasonal allergies, so bear with me. I've been joined on the telephone by my very special guest in Johnson City, Tennessee. And when I scheduled this interview, I went back into the archive and I thought, I wonder how many times I've had this guest on the program. And so I looked and I realized that over the last 10 years, Shuley Kaywood has made more appearances on the program than anybody else. So welcome back to the program, Miss Popular.
Oh, wow. That is exciting. I didn't realize that. I feel really, really special. Thank you. I love being on the Book Nook.
Well, you are special. And April is a special month because it's National Poetry Month. And you're a poet and you write short stories, and you write nonfiction, you write memoir, you teach writing. You just basically do everything. But in April, we think about your poetry, and we think about maybe having you share some with our listeners. Do you have any poems that you've picked out for us this time?
I have picked out poems from other people. If we have time, I will read one of mine. But I have many poems that I love from other people, so I thought I would start with those. How does that sound?
Sounds wonderful. What do you got?
So I have a poem written by DeMarcus Burke, and he's a medical student. There's one word in there I'm just going to say I had to look up, and it's orgo, O-R-G-O. It's in the first line, and that refers to organic chemistry. So I want listeners to understand that before I get into the poem. The poem is called Not One of Us. I took her car after orgo, my hands still reeking of ethanol and effort, backpack sagging, lab coat folded like a question. In the hallway of her rehab wing, the air smelled like soup and the kind of sterile loneliness you can't mop up with bleach. She sat upright, TV glowing with trivia we didn't care about. I was ready to share a test win, but she beat me to it. I love you, she said. You're smart. You and your girl are gonna be doctors. But not for me, not one of us. I need an Indian, a white, an Asian, not black. It didn't sting, not right away. It settled slow, like dust in water that never clears. I nodded, refilled her cup, pulled the blanket higher like I wasn't unraveling under it. Later, when they trained us to simulate empathy, I already knew how to fold my voice into safety, how to take someone's pain without flinching. I wore her judgment in the lining of my white coat, not as shame, as reminder. Some rooms you don't get invited into. You just learn to hold the door open for whoever comes next. And that poem was published on Intima, a journal of narrative medicine. You can find it online.
I know about those rooms that I'm not invited into. What is it about that poem that you like?
I love it because it takes a small moment, and you'll find that with a lot of things that I like, but it takes a small moment, and it talks about something deeper, which is about what separates us, racism, but it just takes a small moment between two people and makes meaning of it that makes it a larger piece, that it makes it more universal, and I love that. I thought he did an outstanding job with this piece.
If you're just tuning in, Shuley Kaywood has joined us, and we're enjoying some poetry. It's National Poetry Month in April in the Book Nook, sharing community voices through inspired storytelling on 91.3 WYSO. And Shuley, I picked out some poems too.
Great.
And I went back to the same book we had on before that I like so much. It's the translations of Seamus Heaney. It came out about 4 years ago. And I have a poem. I really like this poet. She's from Romania. Her name is Ana Blondiana, but that's a pen name. Her actual name is Otilia Valeria Coleman, and she's in her 80s now. She's still writing poetry. And this one's called Maybe There's Somebody Dreaming Me. Maybe there's somebody dreaming me, and that's why my gestures have turned so slack and soft-edged. Their purpose forgotten halfway. My every move idiotic, backsliding and groggy. It explains these states of collapse when my profile keeps fading and all I can do is melts away. And whoever's dreaming me, maybe, every now and again, he comes to his senses, dragged forcibly up from his sleep and into his life, the one that is real. Which is why the shadows unnerve me, and I'm sometimes left hanging on a melting thread of wet snow, not knowing if ever he'll be able to get back to dreaming so that something in my own life can happen to me.
Nice. Very nice. I've never heard of this poet.
I read her last time you were on the show, Shuli.
Oh, sorry.
That's okay. No worries. Okay, so what have you got?
I've got a poem called Bail by Shara Hammonds, and the reason I love this poem so much is I love a narrative poem. I love a poem that tells a story, and it tells a story. So, Bail. At least he had a new reason for not coming home. The fender of the Firebird curled darkly in the grass beside the highway several miles from the house, catching each pair of headlights that went by and devouring them within its curve. As I passed, I tried not to look at it. Deep green relic of the second car totaled in as many months, obscene and surprising as the proof of some old ritual. The neck of the broken brandy bottle would have gaped near it. The spirits discovered, they told me over the phone, against all odds because of the glint it made thrown from the window as the Firebird was rolling. Then they gave me directions and told me to leave right away. It was urgent. So I drove 30 miles in the clothes I had worn 20 hours and didn't bother to fix my makeup. When I arrived, the sun had frozen in the haze over the mountains and stopped getting brighter early. Trapped in icy gray and weak pastel that paled the mesas that ended right before Nine Mile Hill. I went in just to be told to get back in my car and wait. It wouldn't be long. As the morning unstopped, the gray cinder block building reached to the parking lot where I was the only one waiting. I turned off the engine to save the regular unleaded we couldn't afford to waste and grew too cold to shiver. They told me he had to detox, that it took 4 hours to get him sober while I wondered about lawyering up. He came out as if he had stepped out of the bathroom at a restaurant and was looking around for his place, studying the sweat-brown brim of his cowboy hat and scuffing the burgundy boots he called ostrich titty. He opened the door, saying not to say a word, not to ever say a word. Did I understand? There was nothing to talk about. This was my first marriage, one I'd agreed to, and I knew too much now to want to know more. Not about any of the things he'd done, how he'd pay the rent, what he told his mother in Oklahoma, where he believed his prayers, if he did pray, went, or whose miracle it was, his or mine, that he was so good at walking away from every wreck. And that poem was published in Beloit Poetry Journal.
Well, that's like a short story. I see what you mean about,
I know.
About narrative.
I know. I like it so much.
What do you like about it?
I just love a story. I love a poem that tells a story, and I love a poem that is not too, I call it poemy. I like a poem that's accessible so that anybody could, I think, understand it. Doesn't have obscure references, and I just love a good story, so I like a lot of narrative poems.
You don't like poemy poems?
I don't like poemy poems.
Okay. Well, I have one for you then. Okay, you ready for this?
I am.
This is one more from Anna Blondiana. And Blondiana apparently is the name of the town in Romania where her mother was born. but her actual name is Otilia Valeria Komen. And this is called As If. As if the light itself were merely a plant. As if the stars sent down their thin rays like capillary roots, sucking at me to extract their mysterious nutrient. Astral blooms flock to the scalpel like crows to the plow. The size of this field of light scares me. With so many flowers to feed, I'm worn to the bone, fulfilled and woozy with love. And whom can I call for assistance? Will nobody rid me, root, stem, and branch, of this star-sprouting garden? Burst the galactic, numinous dikes, and make way for the ocean of darkness?
Beautiful language. Now tell me what you like about the poem. Why did you pick it?
I like it because I have absolutely no idea what it means.
Was it a poemy poem?
Oh, no. Mm-hmm. No, I think of a poemy poem as one that rhymes with meter. And that has some that has some meter, right? But it's not a rhymer.
That's true. It is not a rhymer.
Do you ever write poetry that rhymes?
No.
No? Why not?
I probably did in grade school. I don't know. I don't enjoy writing formal poetry.
Okay.
Not my thing.
Well, what kind of poems do you enjoy writing?
I like a narrative poem, so I write a lot of narrative poems.
You do?
I do.
And do you have another poem picked out specially for our April audience?
I do. I can read one of mine, or I can read one by another poet. Which would you prefer? I have a stack here.
We have time for the other poets. We'll save yours for dessert.
Okay. This this poem, it does use the F word. So should I just say F instead?
Just say it and we'll bleep you because we love bleeping people.
Okay. I will. So
all
this
right.
Poem is by Chris Toby. And it's called Dear Woman Who Tried to Pick Me Up at a Hollywood Club in 1998. And I will say I love a poem that's addressed to somebody, so that's one of the reasons I really like it. So Dear Woman Who Tried to Pick Me Up at a Hollywood Club in 1998. What if I'd said yes? Imagine I go home with you that night when I'm 20, and when we wake up in the morning, you ask, you know you snore? You laugh at my nighttime retainer, which I'll wear for the rest of my life, and say, you look hot. What if I curl into your arms and stop constantly thinking about where I can meet women? Stop paging through ads. Ignore, I support gay people. I just don't want you to be gay. Ignore, you're so pretty. You can marry any man. Let's imagine you hold my hand through the next decade when I quit acting and finally go to college. And on the last day I wait tables, I come home and tell you I intended to tell a customer to f*** off, but everyone was kind and tipped me double. We sit on the Santa Monica sand, talk about how high rent is, how we can barely pay our parking tickets, and we laugh at the German tourist who doesn't realize this isn't a nude beach. Maybe I stop starving myself, stop eating fat-free soft serve and running 8 miles a day. Maybe I don't have a breakdown, don't swallow pills and end up in the ICU where they wheel me down to the curb once they find out I don't have insurance. And maybe years later I don't try again, sleep in the cardiac unit until after they revive me, my heart skipping. Instead, I rest my head on your shoulder as we reminisce about the night we met in a seedy Hollywood club. I wore some $10 black feathery dress, and after you followed me to the bathroom and back to the dance floor, you walked right up and said, "You're beautiful." I blushed, but rather than waiting 20 more years, I saw it, my beauty and your beauty, and how worthy we were of love.
Well, that's pretty.
Yeah, that's from the Sun magazine, my favorite magazine.
And you said a bad word.
I did.
And we're gonna bleep you because this is public radio. We don't talk like that. Yeah.
Well, that's all.
But
fine.
Everyone's gonna know because you already told them what it was. So
that's true.
They can fill in the bleep. All right.
That sounds good.
Well, I've been thinking a lot about President Trump this week. I think a lot about him every day. That's kind of what he wants, I think. And I've been thinking about his image of himself as Jesus, where he claimed he was trying to look like a doctor. And he had some kind of doctored artificial intelligence picture. Have you seen this?
I have.
Okay. And all the artificial intelligence people have been having fun doctoring that picture and turning into all this other stuff. And so I have a poem here that I would like to read for President Trump. I don't think he would understand it, but I think he would think it was probably about him. Anyway, this is called, and it's by my favorite poet, by the way, my favorite dead poet, Anonymous. You ready for this?
I am very ready.
How's that for a buildup? Was that
yeah,
good?
Pretty good.
Okay, here we go. This is called Jesus and the Sparrows. When Jesus, Son of the Living God, was still a child, 5 years of age, he played in 12 small water puddles that he blessed and fenced around with clay. And Jesus made 12 little bird shapes, the ones that are called passer, out of the smooth clay he had modeled. 12 sparrows on a Sabbath day. Then comes a Jew who cautions Jesus, Son of the Almighty God, and takes him by the hand to Joseph to have him chide his foster son.
Give your son a scolding, Joseph. Caution him for his misdeed. On the Sabbath, he has fashioned clay images of birds.
Then Jesus claps his hands together. They hear his child voice give a shout. Before their eyes, the Prince of Graces scares a flock of sparrows up. They hear him speak the clear, small words. The pure lips of Jesus move. So that you may know who made you, fly home now. Away. Be off. A witness spread the news, a story everybody marveled at. They listened and could hear distinctly the little cries of the birds in flight.
So tell me why you picked the poem. What is it you like about it?
Because it's about Jesus.
Nice.
And I'm not a real religious person, but I think it's a great depiction of how Jesus defied hypocrisy. Mm. And you know, they're saying, oh, you can't do that on the Sabbath, Jesus. And he's like, well, I can do whatever I want because mm-hmm. I created these birds. And stop being a hypocrite. That's the message I get.
Nice.
Yeah. And he was all about love. And I love those little birds. I was downtown the other day outside the Emporium in the breezeway there, and a little sparrow came up, and he was looking for snacks over there. He was dancing around by my foot, just the cutest little thing. And then I saw that poem. I thought, I need some sparrows. So here we go.
Nice.
Well, what have you got for us?
Well, I have a poem that I absolutely love called Tenderness by Stephen Dunn. I've been teaching this poem many times to different classes because I love it so much. Tenderness. Back then, when so much was clear and I hadn't learned young men learn from women what it feels like to feel just right, I was 23, she 34, two children, a husband in prison for breaking someone's head. Yelled at, slapped around, all she knew of tenderness was how much she wanted it. And all I knew were back seats and a night or two in a sleeping bag in the furtive dark. We worked in the same office, banter and loneliness leading to the shared secret that to help National Biscuit sell biscuits was wildly comic, which led to my body existing with hers like rain that's found its way underground to water it naturally joins. I can't remember ever saying the exact word, tenderness, though she did. It's a word I see now you must be older to use. You must have experienced the absence of it often enough to know what silk and deep balm it is when at last it comes. I think it was terror at first that drove me to touch her so softly. then selfishness, the clear benefit of doing something that would come back to me twofold, and finally, sometime later, it became reflexive and motiveless in the high ignorance of love. Oh, abstractions are just abstract until they have an ache in them. I met a woman, never touched gently, and when it ended between us, I had new hands and new sorrow, everything it meant to be a man changed, unheroic, floating. He's a wonderful poet. I've been reading him since college, so a few decades.
Well, you like stories in the poems, and you also seem to like stories about relationships.
I do. I totally do. Yes.
Yeah. Okay, so you have a poem of yours that you want to share, or do you have more of these from these poets you love?
I have one or two poems of mine, and that's all I've got today.
Well, we have just enough time for maybe one or two poems of Shuley K. Woods.
Okay. Well, I'll read the first one, and we'll see what happens. This is called Ode to Two Standard Poodles, and I have a little epigraph below. This is by Mother Teresa. I have found the paradox that if I love until it hurts, then there is no more hurt, only more love. Help is on the way in the form of two poodles, dogs you didn't want, dogs who were supposed to be temporary just for 2 to 3 months while their owner healed from a broken arm, dogs who were not leash trained and arrived tentative in your house with all your rules and regulations, your don't get on the couch and why are you doing that and stop scratching, but you are now the one who takes them to the vet to help with the itching, and you're the one who gives them antihistamines. You were the dispenser of 1,000 medicines to your last dog, the one who died less than a year ago, the one who needed more help some days than you wanted to give, but you doled it out anyway because your love for that dog chained you to this world even when it was hard. And these two dogs now, dogs you were not meant to keep, have been with you for 8 months and counting. And you don't call them yours because someone else is footing the bill. But when you amble down the stairs in the early morning, still so tired from the sleep you did not get, the first thing you do is go to the beds on the floor where the poodles lie and put your arms around them, scratch their bellies, rest your head against theirs, and for a moment you forget about the sleep, the hurt, your parents' growing frailty, and the days that might come that scare you. And the world is small and manageable as you lie there against all the odds. And that was published in Cider Press Review.
That sounds suspiciously like a true story.
This one is absolutely true.
Okay. Because I know a lot of your poetry isn't. And
some of it isn't. This is true, but that one is true.
All right. Well, I would like to remind listeners that I was reading from the translations of Seamus Heaney, published by Farrar, Straus, and Giroux back in 2022. And we're running out of time here. Is your next poem a shorty or is it a longy?
It's one page. I don't know.
What's one page? That's a shorty, right?
Sure.
Okay, do it. Do the shorty.
Okay. It's called You're Too Young Not to Have Breasts. And I'm going to read the title again because it goes into the first line. You're Too Young Not to Have Breasts is what the doctor told me, her gaze steady on my face. My husband sat beside me on the little bench in her Mayo Clinic office. She had just told me the news, cancer, but it was small, able to be caught perhaps like a little mouse that has not mated yet. I wanted nothing in place of what they were going to take. It was a September day glazed in light, the kind that calls for rides on pathways by one of 1,000 lakes. We rented 2 bikes the next morning in Minneapolis, having checked into a hotel with a fireplace and glass windows in the lobby so that if there was sun to see, we could see it. This was meant to be vacation, 2 nights of holiday after days of machines and tests and specialists, but we had banked on good news, not cancer, thinking our luck would not run out so soon. But what is luck, really? It's the sound of birds calling to one another as they rise and dip along the banks of lakes you pedal by, following each other, no one always in the lead. We biked so many miles that day, I stopped counting the hours. We let the sun fall into afternoon, and breeze swept across our changing faces. I did not forget the diagnosis, but I let the city sounds come to me, honks and tow truck clangings and backup beeps, and tether me to cacophony. We ate in a small but clever pho restaurant with another bank of windows, another way to see the trick of light and shadow. We dropped bean sprouts into broth, used our hands to rip basil leaves from their stems, and then we ate everything before us, the dark rising like a ghost in the eastern horizon. I can't remember now if we biked or drove or walked the city blocks back to the hotel, only that we did so together. We'd grown used to the city sounds by then. We didn't hear them anymore, like before. And that was published in Blue Earth Review.
Shuley Kaywood reading her poetry as we observe National Poetry Month in April. And it's always a pleasure having you on the program, Shuley. This was your 13th appearance in the last 10 years.
Wow. Well, I am very honored. I always love it, and I always love celebrating National Poetry Month with you, Vic.
Thank you. Are you working on any books right now?
I am. I have a poetry collection that I hope will be coming out in the next year, and then I'm working on two others.
Just three books? That's all you're working on?
That's it.
Okay. Well, you're kind of slacking off, aren't you?
I know. Okay. I know. I'll try to work harder.
The next time you're in Yellow Springs, maybe you can come in and actually see the inside of the new radio station.
I would love that. Absolutely love that. I'll be there soon.
Okay. Well, for the Book Nook, I'm Vic McCunis, and once again, it's been National Poetry Month, or it still is National Poetry Month, so if you don't normally read poetry, you might want to check some out, because 99.9% of poets don't make a whole lot of money on their poetry. It's not the most lucrative profession in the world, and they need your support. And Shuley, do you agree with that?
I do. Someone once said, you don't sell poetry, you share poetry.
Right. There are a few people, I guess, that do okay with poetry. You know, Billy Collins, people like that. But I think the majority of poets just do it because they love it. And I admire that.
I do, too. They also teach, which is also a wonderful thing.
Right. And you teach. Tell us a little bit about your teaching before we let you go.
Well, the thing that I teach the most is I run a prompt writing workshop, which is we read a poem together. People don't have to be poets, but we read a poem together every Tuesday at noon Eastern, and we talk about it in a non-academic way, and then I give prompts related to it. And that's my most common class, and I get a lot of people, a lot of regulars, too, who come to it. And that way I share poetry, which poetry I love, so it's fun.
What do you mean by a prompt?
A prompt, I give them something that starts their writing. So if the poem were about apples, let's say, then maybe their prompt would be related to writing about apples. That's a terrible example, but for example, in the poem that I just shared about me, I might urge them to write about an illness that they had or some sort of diagnosis. And so I give them something that gets their writing started. People have a hard time with a blank page, and so this kind of is their the point where they can dive off into the pool.
Well, if you gave me an apple as a prompt, I would write about worms, but that's just...
Well, there you go.
That's just where my mind goes.
That's great.
Thanks again, Shuley.
Thank you.
For the Book Nook, I'm Vic McCunis. Once again, my guest has been Shuley Kaywood. You've been listening to your public radio station. Stay tuned.